Coming up on Facts from the Stacks.
Controversial opinion. It doesn't matter.
It reminds me of like which way you put the toilet paper on the toilet paper holder.
Oh, no, that matters. That matters.
Welcome to Facts from the Stacks, a news and trivia podcast for book nerds and library lovers. Facts from the Stacks, created by the staff at the Jackson-Madison County Library, is your library news and book-based trivia podcast. Join your hosts, Kelly and Shane, for what we're reading, what's happening in the library, and tons of trivia. We will have games and quizzes so you can follow along and test your knowledge, but also so we can stump our other library staff.
Welcome back to Facts from the Stacks, all you tea tasters.
Yeah, so this episode is about tea.
We're spilling the tea, but literally, because we're talking about tea, the beverage.
Talking about tea.
Hopefully no gossip will be shared.
Well, we'll spill the tea about TNLA.
That's true. That's a good point.
Which is the Tennessee Library Association Conference that we went to last week. So, all of that coming up after we do our usual recently borrowed.
Woohoo!
Recently for me, I have been listening to the audiobook of All of Us Villains.
Oh yeah, for Book Talk.
Yes, by Amanda Foody and C.L. Herman. Ooh. I'm just like a couple hours into it, but it is very, there's a type of fantasy book that they really modernize how they talk about fantasy things. Hmm. All of the spells and magic in this series is talked about like it's all worked into your clothes and your accessories and your jewelry.
Oh, interesting.
And all of the spells are not named like they are in something like Harry Potter, okay, but they're all named very literal things like stop screaming. And that's just what the spell is called.
Oh.
They're like, oh, I have a stop screaming spell.
Oh.
And like, so it's all very literal and it's very, I don't know, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
The whole plot is like there's a Hunger Games style fight for the like best magic.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, and
like
so
they kill each other.
Yeah, there's all these. There's a bunch of different families that fight for it every so often, like every several years. And so it's about one of the main characters is part of a family who has never won at all.
Okay.
And so I don't know. It's gonna be interesting. It's pretty gritty so far, so I'm interested to see where it goes.
And is it a series?
It is. Right now, I think there are only two.
Okay.
I don't know if they go beyond that or not, but it has been interesting to listen to, and of course, the narrator is British, so
love it.
Get to listen to a British accent.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Wonderful.
Yeah. What are you reading?
I am listening to Honey and Spice by Bolu Babalola, and it's another Reese's Book Club book.
Okay.
And it's just delightful. Well, it's not delightful, but it's not like cute and fun.
It's a good book.
Yeah, I'm getting lost. Anyway, it's about this girl named Kiki, and she's going to college in London. And it's just kind of about her life and like her love life and all this stuff. But it's really interesting because it's like specifically like the black culture on her campus and like the like that dynamic and how that is a little bit different like in England than it is here.
It's funny you bring that up because there's a show on Amazon that keeps getting like advertised to me that is something similar.
Yeah.
It's like a prestigious school that allows some black students to attend, even though that's not historically like a normal thing for them, and how weirdly everyone treats them because it is so out of the ordinary.
Yeah, this is cool because it's like, I think, I mean, I don't know if she says or not, but I think the school is like majority white, but like the black students at this school have like their whole own little culture, and like the cliques are all very outlined, and they have their own events and council and this whole thing. So it was just interesting. But I like to just like the slang is different, like the British slang or like the black British slang is interesting. And the audiobook specifically is really good. Like, sometimes when I read books like about different cultures, I appreciate that I did the audiobook instead of reading the actual book, because I never would have like in my head pronounced things right, or, you know, just had the same like essence that you get from the audiobook. So that's been fun, because you're like learning something while you're reading the story, you know? But yeah, it's really good. And it's cool because she has like a radio show, and like even when the characters are on the phone, like they did stuff to the audio to make it sound like that.
Oh, that's fun.
So that's a cool element too.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
That's a good one. Facts from the Stacks. We'll be right back. If you've been listening to us talk about the books we've been reading but don't have the time to come in and check them out, there's a solution for you. The library has online resources so you can check out books without ever leaving home. With Libby and Hoopla, you can access thousands of books, audiobooks, movies, TV shows, and magazines, all in the palm of your hand. Check out the episode's description or check out the library's website, jmclibrary.org, for more information.
All right. So as I mentioned earlier, last week we went to the Tennessee Library Association conference, which was, you know, for all of you people listening who are not part of the library world on the inside. Yes, libraries have conferences and it's a really great time. It's like a 3-day affair. It was in Franklin this year.
Yes, so
we got to go and stay over in Franklin, and that was fun. And basically just attend a bunch of sessions about our careers. It was a really good time. One of my favorite things is playing TNLA Bingo, in which we put things on a bingo sheet. Like people who are carrying like 3+ tote bags, people who have book jewelry, people who have man buns.
Conferences are the best for people watching, really.
Yeah, I did a lot of people watching.
Same.
Like between sessions. And yeah, it was a great time. You really learn that your experience as a librarian is not unique. Like, there are other librarians there that look like you do.
And have the same
deal with the same things that you deal with.
That's true.
It was a good time. There was a lot about AI.
That was interesting.
So I feel more informed.
Because I think, like, you hear about it a lot, but I didn't really understand how to sort of educate myself about it, if that makes sense. Without, like, getting too lost in a wormhole. So this was helpful because it was obviously very specific to the context of the work that we do. And so the stuff that I learned was like how to specifically use these different platforms to help you in your job or to help you do X, Y, or Z thing. So that just really vibed with how I take in information.
I agree with that. And like, as somebody who does, you know, I do write, I've always avoided AI very hard because I don't want to have that involved in my creative process. But one of the sessions that both of us went to was really fun because they kind of like talked about the ethics of AI use. And like, I walked out of that session being like, oh, so there are things that I can use AI for that are more like getting my brain kickstarted for something and not relying on it entirely to do all of the work.
Yeah, I appreciated learning, I think from both the AI sessions I went to, they really broke that down of like, here's things you should do and here's things you shouldn't do and what it's useful for and, you know, things you should keep in mind. I felt like that was helpful.
Yeah, it was a pretty good time. I feel like I learned a lot. I feel like I walked away with a lot of, a lot more knowledge on how to plan and brainstorm things. Like, just in general, but also using AI. And then, you know, there's always talking about programs we have and stuff like that. But it's, you know, one of the best parts is having fellowship with other librarians.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a fun time. So we just wanted to share a little bit of that with all of our people who are listening. That being said, we can move on to facts about tea.
Woohoo!
Did you know? Did you know? Did you know? All right, you big know-it-all. Did you know?
So, most of what I have is a look at some of the culture surrounding tea in a, like, Chinese sense, because it's such a big part of Chinese culture and their economy in the past and things like that. So that's a big part of what my section will focus on. And then I think you told me that you have info on British tea culture.
Same thing, but make it British.
So let's talk about basic tea without culture stuff attached to it. All tea, all actual quote-unquote tea, comes from the same plant. Like one type of plant.
I didn't know that.
No? That is the Camellia sinensis. So basically all teas, white tea, black tea, green tea, they all come from the exact same like type of plant.
Really?
It's just about when they're harvested. A lot of it's when they're harvested. A lot of them can be like the soil conditions and stuff like that will give different flavors to it. So that's one of the big things.
That is fascinating.
Herbal teas are not tea in the traditional sense.
Because they
don't actually contain tea leaves.
Right. Because like chamomile is literally the flower, right?
Right. So flowers, herbs, dried fruit, stuff like that. Which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because that's actually where a lot of my experience with tea comes from, I think. Other than just sweet tea.
Is like herbal teas. Yeah.
Because there was a chain probably about 10 years ago, maybe not that long, but that was very popular that I wish we had one here in Jackson that was called Teavana.
We had that.
Starbucks bought them out.
Yes.
And Teavana was this magical store.
Magical.
With very expensive teacups and teapots.
It smelled so good in there.
But it smelled so good. And they had these giant tin tubs of tea. Or tea, quote unquote.
Right.
But like when you could walk up to that counter and be like, I would like to, can I sample that one? And they would waft the tea towards you so you could smell.
That. Yes.
And it was so cool.
Yeah. Do you ever go to a David's Tea?
David's
It's very similar.
No. Do those still exist?
I don't know.
I would love something like that again because
I forgot how great that was.
Yeah. Like I got to the point where I bought several of their teas and I probably still have some of them and they're probably not good anymore. But like it's dried fruit and herbs and stuff. How bad could it possibly
be? Honestly, who cares?
But there was this like what's it called when a company makes a specific, like a trademarked product. It's their...
Oh, I see. Like their signature blend or something, or...
Like a product, like an item.
Their flagship, that's not right.
What is the word? It starts with a P, I think. I can't remember. Anyway.
Proprietary.
That's the one. They had this like proprietary... at the time...
The thing that brewed it?
Yes.
That thing was so cool.
And you would sit it on top of your cup and it would drain out the bottom. I still have that.
Yes. And I remember, like, when we were at the store and my mom got one, them talking about that, how it was a huge deal. And, like, they invented it.
They made a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
And it is nice.
It's
it
so cool.
It was very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks for bringing that memory back.
Yeah. I miss Teavana. I should probably just buy some teas online.
Yeah.
To get back in the game.
Where was Teavana? Here.
So there wasn't one in Jackson. You had to go to Memphis.
Okay.
I believe. Gotcha. They had one in Memphis and one in Nashville.
Groovy.
Yeah. And then last little general tea fact is that if left untrimmed, so tea usually comes in bush form, is how we farm them.
Okay.
But if we keep them trimmed that way on purpose. If you leave a tea tree untrimmed, it will turn into a tree, like a full tree.
Tea tree oil.
Correct.
Oh my god. I never put that together.
So they, but the easiest way for us to harvest is to leave them as bushes. They're easier to maintain.
Right.
They're easier to harvest. But if they're untrimmed, they can grow nearly to 100 feet and live for 50 years.
Wow.
But it's just easier for us to keep them as bushes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the first thing you said, is that similar to like bell peppers? So like a green bell pepper is just a earlier baby of a red bell pepper.
Right, stuff like that.
Okay.
It is the same. Like, there are different, like, subtypes within that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, like, overall, tea is one plant.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's that?
So, tell us about some British tea, tea stuff.
So, I read an article that I found on Tennessee Electronic Library called Time for Tea from The English Home Magazine, which sounds like a wonderful magazine.
Yeah, sounds great.
I should probably
dive right up your alley.
Oh, yeah. And the article was from March of 2024, so hot and fresh.
Wow, really, really recent.
Yes. So, it is often cited that the 7th Duchess of Bedford invented the custom of afternoon tea in 1840 when she requested something to tide her over between lunch and dinner. And that girl is a girl after my own heart.
Snacky queen.
I know.
Literally queen. Snacky queen.
So I think now it's like very ritualistic and very precise and stuff. So that came through over time. But yeah, that's the story, is that she needed a little afternoon snack.
Wow.
I love that.
And that's a mood.
Yeah.
I could go for an afternoon snack.
100%.
It's 3:34.
Yeah. So let's go have some tea.
Wow. Interesting.
So now it's very specific in England, and it's expected to have crustless finger sandwiches, a selection of tiny cakes, and scones with cream and jam. And the idea, apparently, of adding anything different to that mix is wild, scandal, crazy.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like very precise, like, according to this article.
Interesting.
Which I thought was cool.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, I've been to like some tea houses in America, obviously.
Yeah.
And like have done afternoon tea or like the fun, you know, like, I don't know what you have in your mind when it's like, oh, we're going to tea. And I bet we Americans be adding stuff to the plate that's not supposed to be there.
Oh, probably so.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of, when you say crustless sandwiches, what kind of sandwiches are we talking?
I don't know if the article specified, but in my mind, it's the kind that have cucumber
like
and
cucumber.
Cream cheese.
Okay, yeah, okay. That's what also came to my mind, and I was like, is that really what they do?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, interesting. I just made that up, but that's what I think of as a tea sandwich.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. And then it went into talking about how this ritual of tea was actually very empowering to women during a time when they had little rights, because men normally drank coffee and cocoa at a specific like coffee or cocoa house, so like outside of the home.
Oh.
And so the women could have control of the tea ritual at home. Brits still say, I'll be mother, which I think means, like, I will pour the tea, I will make the tea, like, you know, I'll be mother, and, like, be in charge of the tea.
Whoa.
Ritual. I know, isn't that neat?
You may call me mother.
Yeah. And then along those lines, a lot of early suffragette meetings came about in tea rooms. And so this is, you know, fast forward. The tea rooms cropped up when taxes on teas lowered. So people used to have it at home and it was expensive, and so it was very like special. And then the taxes lowered and they started having tea rooms, but they already had this culture of like women having tea together, enjoying. And then they started spilling the tea about the right to vote.
Oh, so then it became...
Yeah, so then they started going out into the tea houses, but yeah, a lot of the early suffragette meetings happened in the tea room.
That is absolutely fascinating.
I know. What a great article.
Whoa.
I think I should subscribe to that magazine.
That's pretty cool.
On the Tennessee Electronic Library, it's just like the text of the articles. But so I don't even know what the actual interior of this magazine looks like, but I bet it's stunning.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Facts from the Stacks will be right back. If you're the creative type and enjoy storytelling and writing, come to the Jackson Writers Guild right here at your local library.
Every second and fourth Thursday at 5:30, meet with like-minded writers who write in every genre you can imagine. Learn important parts of the writing process from conception to publishing, and participate in activities that will encourage you to be confident in sharing your work. Whether you've been writing for years or you're just starting, or whether you've published before or you're just writing for yourself, all experience levels are welcome.
So let's fly back across the world.
Yeah, let's go back across. We will go to China. So in China, tea was, you know, a huge, huge part of their economy. And so the first thing that I looked at were Chinese wedding tea ceremonies, which are things that people will still do today. But they were started in the Tang Dynasty in China, which is between 618 and 907 AD.
Okay.
So somewhere in the range of like 1400 years ago, you know, ish. But basically what that is after a wedding ceremony, the bride and groom will serve tea to their families.
Aww.
And they will put cushions down on the floor. They will kneel on those cushions and they will serve tea to each of their like immediate family members.
That's
to their
beautiful.
Parents, their grandparents, and they will basically serve each other's families.
That is so beautiful.
Yeah. So basically it was a, you know, the family member accepts the tea from you. They're in support of your marriage.
Yeah.
And then those family members can give you gifts and things like that at that time.
Okay. That makes me wonder, like, I wonder if there's statistics on, like, is having beef with your in-laws a specifically American thing? Like, do we have more problems with that in our culture?
I don't have numbers for this, but right. I feel like the American culture, possibly like other, like British culture as well, but specifically American culture, I feel like we don't care to get permission from in-laws. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For, you know, a lot of this is based on seeing things in the media and whatnot, but like, you've seen Crazy Rich Asians, right?
Yes.
They were very disapproving of her.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like that's kind of the thing, is if you don't have your family's approval, because your family is such an integral part of your life.
Right.
And we have multi-generational households, you know, in other parts of the world that we don't do that here as much. So, yeah, I think it's a much bigger deal.
Yeah, I was just curious, like, if we had something like that in our wedding customs, would things be better?
Could be interesting, yeah.
Because that seems like a really beautiful way to start off your blending of family.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's very interesting. But then one of the basic gifts that they will do is, you may have seen it in movies or aesthetic, like, generally, like in Chinese aesthetics, the red envelopes with the gold designs on them, those are usually like, you'll put money in those and give them as a gift. And those specifically in the red envelopes are a sign of luck and good fortune and everything.
Oh, neato.
So yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah.
Aside from the ceremonies, they also did tea competitions.
Ooh.
So that included the entire tea making process.
Whoa.
From like how the tea was dried, the water that is used. One of the people who was responsible for popularizing tea competitions had 20 different rankings for the water that you use.
Whoa.
From like top quality to the lowest quality.
Interesting.
So the highest quality water, which was Tiashui, is the highest quality one. It is from rain or snow collected in bamboo tubes.
Ah.
So, like, that's the best water you could make tea out of.
Interesting.
Natural spring water is second on that list.
Yeah.
And like so on and so forth all the way down to like here's well water, which is still like when we get well water here, like I feel like that's still like, oh, well water, that's so interesting. This is different from tap water.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But that's the lowest one, so you can get water from the river, et cetera, et cetera. Oh. But there were all these rankings for the water quality, and there was a big emphasis on whipping the tea.
Oh.
That would, like, mixing it kind of like matcha.
Mm.
So, you know, when you make matcha, you have, like, the whisk.
Yes.
So that was part of it, was whisking it and how you make... How you were able to whip it to make the foam on top.
Whoa.
So the more attractive the foam, you know, that was a big part of that as well.
Interesting.
And so for both the ceremony and competition, those water rankings were important, as well as the quality of the tea and everything.
That is so interesting.
It's just like, wow, there's a lot involved there. 20 different?
Yeah.
I can't think of 20 different water sources.
Yeah, same.
But there were, you know, little details.
Mm-hmm.
You got to collect it in them bamboo tubes.
True.
It's very
that
different.
That does sound pretty tasty.
It's very interesting. Yeah. That does give, like, the vibe of being very fresh.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, I get it.
Okay. So, back to my article here about British tea culture. So the 20s and 30s are known as the golden age of afternoon tea. Even during the Depression, it was a way to enjoy a little luxury, and it served a purpose as well because you could then afford a lighter supper. So your afternoon treat, you got to enjoy that, but then you also didn't need as much at dinner time during the Depression.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Have your little cucumber sandwiches and your tea.
Yeah.
Have a lighter dinner. Cheaper for everybody.
Love it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then it talked about scones. So apparently, similar to the specificity of the afternoon tea ritual, how one doctors up their scone is a thing. So the Cornish way is to put the jam first and then the cream.
And
the Devon way is to put the cream and then the jam. And apparently there's like a hot rivalry about this.
Controversial opinion. It doesn't matter.
It reminds me of like which way you put the toilet paper on the toilet paper holder.
Oh, no, that matters. That matters.
I'm trying to think of something similar that people like.
Left Twix, right Twix.
Yeah, it's giving left Twix, right Twix.
Like, it doesn't matter.
True.
It's the same.
Yeah, but apparently that's a big deal.
Interesting.
Yes. Okay. And then talking about teacups. So Fortnum & Mason, which is a luxury department store known for tea specifically, they say that you hold the handle of the teacup between your thumb and your fingers. Don't curl your fingers through the handle. You pinch it.
You pinch it. Okay.
Yes. And no pinkies up unless you're auditioning for the role of Mrs. Bennet in Pride and Prejudice. The
specifically?
Sass. Yeah, it was like, I think it was like thrown a little shade.
A little
like,
dig.
Don't put your pinkies up, you dinguses.
Oh my gosh.
So apparently pinkies up is not actually fancy.
Wow.
It's pretentious fanciness
SpongeBob,
like Mrs. Bennet.
SpongeBob lied to me.
Yeah, he really did.
Wow.
And then you're supposed to stir gently back and forth. Do not round and round, because clinking is to be avoided.
So, I feel like I would be more likely to clink if I was going back and forth.
Yeah, so I guess you're just supposed to be really gentle and precise instead of like clink, 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 clink all the way around the whole edge, I suppose.
Interesting.
But yeah, these specifics just really delighted me.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the tea.
On tea.
Our final facts and quiz segment will be right after this break.
Hey gang, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably already a pro at libraries. You already know the library is about more than just books. But if you're looking to level up your skills, you should check out The Space, your library's very own makerspace. The Space has so much to offer. From crafting to coding, if there's something you'd like to make, we can help you do it. Want to try something new? This is the place for you. If there's one thing we're not afraid to make in The Space, it's mistakes. Come check it out during open space hours on Tuesdays 3 to 6 and Saturdays 10 to 12.
So since you mentioned teacups, mm-hmm. I will talk a little bit about teapots.
Oh, yes.
So you may have seen on TikTok or, you know, Instagram, whatever, there was a video that went around about Chinese teapots and how different the quality in them is.
Oh, I did not see that.
Okay, so there's a specific kind of teapot called the Yijing teapot that is made of a clay harvested from Yijing in the Jiangsu province of China.
Okay.
So it's a very specific clay mix that's only found in this one spot. Mm. And it is a compound clay that has a lot of minerals. It's said to have mica in it, zinc, quartz, and iron oxide. So it's got a lot of different mixtures of minerals. And those minerals transform the taste of the tea. Oh, is what they sense. Say. So the vessel that you put your tea in can really change the flavor. Mm. So this specific clay is... this is where a lot of the fancy teapots come from. Okay. That's what they're made of. To a point where the Chinese government limits excavation of that clay so that they don't deplete the entire clay. Like,
yeah,
all of it. They don't want to use it all.
I thought initially, I was like, how do they not run out of clay in this one spot?
Yeah, so the government is very strict on excavation of it.
Interesting.
So basically, the article I was looking at talks about if you see a Yijing teapot that is, like, you can see the circles, like it was on a potter's wheel, fake. Not correct.
Trash.
They're not, that type of clay is not meant for being put on a potter's wheel.
Okay.
They're just supposed to shape it.
Oh, like by hand.
Like by hand.
How do you spell that? I want to get a visual.
That is Yixing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're all generally the same shape-ish.
They're cute.
They're cute little teapots. There's slightly different sizes and shapes to accommodate very specific kinds of tea.
Interesting.
So, like, because of how certain teas are, like, the tea leaves are cut different ways before they're dried, so you need a different shape of teapot to, like, fully allow those tea leaves to bloom.
Fascinating.
It's very specific. And there's all these different measures of quality for these teapots, and one of them is the actual spout, which is called, I guess, the jet.
Oh, interesting.
So the video that I was talking about that went a little viral shows a bad quality one, and they're pouring it, and it's creating ripples and it's splashing and all this stuff, but it says that it goes on and shows these different quality ones, and the highest quality one, they're pouring it and it's not disturbing the surface of the water at all.
Whoa.
Even when they lift it, like, 3 feet up, it's just pouring directly and not splashing, nothing. So it's very important in those teapots that they pour a consistent stream of tea that won't disturb, because that ensures that everyone's tea is the same.
Oh, okay.
It's all equal. The pour is even. Everything's the same.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, the teapots can transform the tea's taste.
Interesting.
So there are other types of teapots within Chinese tea culture that may be used for specific. They talk about porous clay being used for darker teas because it will absorb, and then for lighter teas you use a less porous one.
Okay.
It's very, very in depth.
Yeah, because when I think in my head, like, just the picture of a Chinese teapot, I picture those ones that are almost like cast iron.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about? And they have, like, a bamboo handle a lot of the time, like this. That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah, so there are ones like that. There are tons of different teapots, but those specifically, that clay is very...
Yeah, fascinating.
Very well-liked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Do you have other sections? Mm-mm. No. Okay. So then the last thing I wanted to talk about, which I thought was really interesting, is a teepet.
Yeah, what is that?
So teepets are little clay figurines that are shaped like, a lot of them are zodiac animals, okay, dragons, a lot of the like Chinese fantastical creatures.
Okay.
I've seen little, when I was looking, I saw little Buddhas.
Aww.
But they are, they're just made of this porous clay. And every time you have tea, you set them on your tea tray and you pour tea on them. And so over time, they absorb that tea and it will turn, they will change colors, mm-hmm, and they will absorb the tea scent.
Oh.
And so like, they're just kind of to show the teas that you've had,
mm,
and they, it kind of likened them to like a very like non-technological version of like a Tamagotchi.
Yeah.
Like you rate, like you're giving them tea along with your friend. Yeah, they're your friend. And so one of them is really amusing, and it is called the most popular one, I will say.
They're so cute.
No, they're really cute. The most popular one is called the Pee Pee Boy.
Okay, that's so funny because I just read a book, but it was in Mexico, talking about the Pee Pee Boy.
Really?
It's like a little squirt toy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, the Pee Pee Boy is a little clay figure, and it's got...
It's just like that. Okay, I'll show you. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. It's a little, it's the little clay figure, and he's got a little hole to pee from,
mm-hmm,
and you submerge him in cold water, and then you stand him up on the tea tray, and then when you pour your tea over him, it will tell you, you can infer, that the temperature of the tea is the right temperature for drinking, because it will cause the hot tea will cause the cold water that he was soaked in to come out of the hole.
Just like, specifically the hole.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you will know that your tea is ready to drink when you pour it on the pee pee boy and he pees.
Fascinating.
And I just thought that is so funny.
Yes.
I want to see the Mexican one.
Yeah, I read this graphic novel called MexiKid. It's a juvenile graphic, and we were reading it for my class I'm taking. And it's set in the 70s, and he talks about this pee-pee man that they get in Mexico.
Oh, my God.
So this is the page from the book. But it's like a little toy. So you fill, you take his hat off and fill him with water, and then he's like a squirt toy.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's so funny that it's like a similar
It's very thing. Similar. Oh my gosh.
Oh, it's a hollow Cupid doll wearing a pink sombrero. And when you fill it with water and then squeeze the hat, a stream of pee comes out.
That is so funny. Oh my gosh. I like that we've got one that is a toy and one that is For fancy tea, quote unquote. Yeah.
I feel like I might need a tea pet.
I mean, it sounds really cute. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of like, this thing has had tea with me,
yeah,
and with my friends. Cute. It's just kind of cute.
That reminds me of, have you read the Tea Dragon books? Tea Dragon Society?
Yes, the Tea Dragon Society.
Yeah, it reminds me of that, right? Because they get like a tea dragon, like a little real live pet.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's what they were inspired by.
It probably was, honestly. What a good, cute little graphic novel.
Yeah, those are cute.
Highly recommend. I need to read the other ones. I only read the first one, I think.
Yeah, they're pretty quick.
Yeah, they're very quick little reads. Mm-hmm. They're very cute. That being said, I do not have a quiz for this episode. Just because I don't. That's all. I do not.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for listening. That's the Tea on Tea.
That's it. And you can join us again in 2 weeks where we will do episode 26 about candy.
Woohoo! That should be good.
Yeah, I think that'll be a fun time.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Let us know if you have any facts to share with us, if you've been reading anything good. Mm-hmm. We'd love to hear it.
Yes, indeed.
We will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.